You are listening to RotoViz Radio, a fantasy football podcast, with your host, Matthew Friedman.
Hey everyone, I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. the Oracle of the Action Network and RotoViz. Welcome to a special edition of RotoViz Radio. Today we are talking about the Cincinnati Bengals. In between the NFL Combine and the draft, I'm interviewing beat reporters for every franchise, 32 teams, 32 beat writers, and 32 episodes. We are covering team needs, free agency, draft rumors, basically everything between now and day one of the draft. For this episode, I'm joined by Jay Morrison of the Dayton Daily News and Cox Media Group, where he is a beat writer for the Bengals. In this episode, he talks with us about the team's multiple needs on the offensive line, the Bengals' bullishness on its young skill position players, and where Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis are in their career arcs with the team. One quick and unfortunate note. In the middle of my conversation with Jay, fortunately, right after we had finished talking about most of the offensive players, my mic cut out for a few seconds and the recording device stopped recording. So the second half of the conversation is lost because I am a donkey. But don't worry, I do give a recap of what Jay talked about, and then I also give a few thoughts on our conversation, and we still have a solid, I believe, 12 minutes or so with Jay. Before we get to the guest, I'd like to remind you that you can get a listeners only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the premium NFL content on the site, and it supports the pod. All right, let's get to the guest. Please welcome to the show Jay Morrison of the Dayton Daily News and Cox Media Group. You can follow him on Twitter at JMorrisonCMG, where he provides up-to-the-minute news on everything to do with the Cincinnati Bengals. Jay, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, glad to join you.
It's a fantastic time of year. We've had the combine. Free agency is now starting to wrap up, and then there's this fantastic build-up to the draft. So it'll be interesting to think about what the Bengals might be doing for their draft plans. But first, let's kind of recap a little bit of free agency and looking at 2017. The team really struggled with the offensive line, especially without longtime left tackle Andrew Whitworth. But this offseason, they were able to swing a trade with Buffalo, acquiring Cordy Glenn from the Bills in exchange for first-round picks. Glenn has been injured for chunks of the last two seasons. What are the Bengals expecting to get from him?
Well, they're hoping to get 16 games as a starter at left tackle. I think he's going to go into camp as the starter at that position. The good thing is the contract, if he is hurt this year, he doesn't work out for whatever reason, they can get out of this deal after 1 year without any kind of major hit. So it really, you know, if you're going to go sign someone in free agency, or if you're going to draft a kid out of college with the first round at that tackle position, it's going to be much more of a financial burden. This is really a best case scenario for them. They don't like to move down. They don't like to give up their draft equity, and they moved down 9 spots to get Cordy Glenn. But considering the overall picture, I think it was a great trade, and the key will just be his health. I mean, everybody that Marvin Lewis talked to gave a good grade of Cordy. He's a good locker room guy. They like what they see on film. It's just a matter if he can stay healthy.
Now, there are other issues along the offensive line. Left tackle is obviously very important, but do you think that the team is done addressing the offensive line, or is that going to be a position they really look to address heavily in the draft?
Yeah, they're gonna attack it in the draft. I wouldn't be surprised to see them take another tackle if the guy they want is there at 21, and they've got to get a center. I mean, they let Russell Bodine leave and go to Buffalo. In a number of moves where Bills and Bengals kind of traded place, A.J. McCarron went to Buffalo. You got all this swapping. Preston Brown, the Bills linebacker, he came to Cincinnati. It's almost like they've got this little symbiotic relationship going on between the two franchises. But, you know, Bodine started all 64 games the last 4 years. They traded up to get him in that 2014 draft and grabbed him in the fourth round, plugged him in as a starter. I don't think he developed into quite what they had hoped, but he was durable. He did start every single game, and it's a glaring hole now, because the only other true center on the roster is T.J. Johnson, who was a seventh-round pick in 2013, and he's kind of bounced around between the 53-man and the practice squad. He started some games at guard when they had issues there. And then they've got Trey Hopkins, who went into last season as a projected starter at guard, and he did start at guard. He can play center. And you've got Christian Westerman, a kid they drafted a couple years ago, who really they kind of buried the last 2 years. And then toward the end of last season, when they had all those issues on the offensive line, they put him in there. And the last couple games, he played really well. And when they drafted him, they talked about his potential as a center. So they've got some guys that can play the position, but I think we're going to see him go after either in that first round. They don't typically like to take centers in the first round, but I think this is a case where they may need to, or on the second day on Friday in the second or third round. I think they're going to address that position very early.
You know, over the last few years, I mean, really even longer than that, but the last few years, the team has invested a significant number of top 100 draft picks into skill position players. And recently, they haven't had much to show for it. So Tyler Boyd was a second rounder 2 years ago, and then John Ross and Joe Mixon were first and second rounders last year. All of those players to this point have, I think it's probably safe to say, underperformed expectations. What are the organizational thoughts on what these players can be expected to do for the team this year?
I think they are sky high on Joe Mixon. It was a bit of a disappointing year number-wise, but he really showed a lot of growth as the year went on. And this was a top 10 rushing offense the last half of the season. I mean, they really kind of got it figured out. They had to change offensive coordinator, really kind of had to scramble to piece together a new plan. And they went away from kind of the zone blocking scheme and went to just more, running more power. Then they let their offensive line coach leave. He went to Dallas. The Dallas offensive line coach, Frank Follett, came to Cincinnati and another kind of a weird swap. And they are really high on this running game, and they are really high on Joe Mixon. He handled everything they did with him last year so well, because I don't know how familiar the listeners are, but they started Jeremy Hill every game, and they started the first series, and then they would do the same thing in the second half, and then they would bring Joe Mixon in. And it was really hard for Joe to kind of get in a flow, but he never complained, and he got better as the season went on. I really think the sky's the limit for this kid. He wowed everybody in training camp, and then they kind of helped put the reins on him, which they tend to do with rookies sometimes. They're going to unleash him this year, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a top five back. He's just that good, and he's getting better as a pass receiver as well. The arrow's also trending up for Tyler Boyd. He was one of those situations. He came in as a rookie, and it took him a while to figure out how to use him. Then the second half of the season, he really played well, and he led the NFL as a rookie in third down receptions. Had some issues last year. It was really strange. He was inactive for a couple games, and that was with John Ross, their first-round pick, inactive most of the time. Tyler Boyd really started coming around toward the end of the year, and he had that huge game-winning catch in the season finale against Baltimore that put Buffalo into the playoffs. And the offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, talked about what a giant boost of confidence that is for a kid like Tyler Boyd to make that kind of play, to kind of carry him into the offseason. I think they're expecting more big things from him this year. John Ross, they are really high on him, but his injury history, both in college and last year, it's still just a giant question mark. It was really interesting at the combine, Duke Tobin, who's their director of player personnel, basically their de facto GM, because they don't actually have a GM. But he said that the two receivers they took last year, John Ross in the first round and Josh Malone in the fourth round, they think both of those guys are better than any receiver in this year's class. So it's almost like they're getting another first round pick this year when they're going to be able to finally get John Ross on the field and healthy. But until he can go out and prove it, he's just a big question mark.
Yeah, let's stick with John Ross a little bit as a follow-up question there. So right now he's buried on the depth chart behind at least A.J. Green, Brandon LaFell, and Tyler Boyd. How do you think the receiving unit will shake out?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. A lot will depend on the draft if they target another guy pretty high. And, you mentioned that. I really like Josh Malone. I think he's going to surprise some people. He did some good things last year. Didn't get a lot of opportunity, but You know, he's one of those guys. He could push Brandon LaFell. They love veterans. They love Brandon LaFell specifically, everything he brings. But, you know, he's not a dynamic playmaker. He's just kind of one of those solid wide receivers. But he is starting to get on the backside of his career. And I don't think it's a lock that he makes this roster, especially if John Ross and if Josh Malone really shine in the preseason. You know, he could be one of those guys that if the writing's on the wall, I could even see the Bengals cutting him early in camp and kind of, you know, doing him a solid, so to speak, and letting him try to catch on with another team. So I would not pencil him in as one of the top three at the moment.
AJ Green, one of the best receivers in the league, but he will be turning 30 at the end of the summer. Are there internal concerns about his potential moving forward, the possibility of him slowing down?
I don't think there are. Last year, I won't say it was alarming, but it was surprising. He had a lot of drops last year. I don't know. I don't think it was age catching up with them. It might have just been a lack of focus. Just the way the season was going, it was really uncharacteristic. You don't see him drop balls at all, and it happened a lot, and several of them ended up being interceptions. And you know, nobody's beating himself up more than AJ. He prides himself on his hands, on his game overall. He's the anti NFL wide receiver. When you talk about demeanor, it seems to be kind of one of those diva positions, and he's just just puts his nose down, works hard, does everything right, stays out of trouble. Just a terrific guy. And I think we're going to see him come back with a real fire and a real hunger this year to kind of get back to the AJ Green that everybody was used to. He wants to prove last year was an aberration. It was still a pretty solid year when you look at the numbers overall, but the drops really bugged him. And I don't think as an organization they were worried about it so much. It made them take note, but I think once we get into training camp and preseason and we see if it continues, then the alarm bells might start going off. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we're going to see a rejuvenated AJ Green in 2018.
One other pass catcher to talk about is Tyler Eifert. He's been in the league 5 years. It feels like he's played only maybe a season and a half worth of games. He has tremendous ability to dominate in the red zone when he's healthy, but he's had trouble staying on the field. He's backed up by Tyler Kroft. What is the team expecting from Tyler Eifert, and what is the, the potential upside for Tyler Kroft if he is able to emerge as a reliable piece of that offense as he was, you know, for a chunk of the season last year?
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Eifert, that was big getting him back. Tyler knew that he wasn't going to get a lot of guaranteed money because of his injury history. You said it seems like a season and a half. It's been about two and a half. He's missed more games than he's played in his career. But when he is on the field, he's so dynamic, and it's not just the red zone. That's where he shines. But he really can open up the middle of the field, and he was another reason why AJ's numbers slipped a little bit last year, because you know when you've got him running down the seam, you've got to account for that, and that just opens things up on the outside for the receivers. They're hoping. I mean, he's going to have a nice contract if he hits all of his escalators and all of the incentives, but it's a low ball contract, which is what he figured he was going to get. He had a chance to go to the Rams for about the same amount of money, and Tyler felt like he owed it to the Bengals organization that stuck with him all this time to give what he said a good season. He says he's 100% healthy. The Bengals say their doctors haven't actually looked at him. It was Tyler's personal doctor that deemed him ready to play. But, you know, until you get an NFL doctor saying that, it's a different matter. But all expectations are that he's going to be ready to go for off-season workouts coming up here next month and then into training camp. And with Tyler Kroft, he's not as good as Tyler Eifert in the red zone, but he's emerging as a very good red zone tight end. He's got great hands. He's not as good as Eifert in terms of stretching the field and, you know, between the 20s, but he just doesn't have the same kind of speed as Tyler Eifert. But he's a guy that really I mean, his production in the red zone was huge last year. Now, he had 7 touchdowns. 4 of them came in 2 games. He had 2 touchdown games. But a thing to keep in mind here is Tyler Eifert, Tyler Croft, and their other tight end, C.J. Uzomah, all are going into the final year of their contract. So I think that's a position they're going to go after in the draft. And in another year, it might be something they target in the first round. And, you know, they took Tyler Eifert in the first round. They took Jermaine Gresham in the first round. I just don't see that kind of tight end available this year in the draft. So I don't think that's going to be an option for them at 21 in the first round. Probably more of a second, most likely a third day, but it's a position they're going to have to address because, like I said, all 3 of those guys are going in the final year of their deals.
Unfortunately, again, my mic cut out and we missed the second half of the interview with Jay, a Bengals beat writer for the Dayton Daily News and Cox Media Group. Just to recap, for the second half of the conversation, we talked about the defensive line. The team is pleased with the unit it has, and it will likely continue to rotate players heavily. The big question is whether the team will be able to lock up Carlos Dunlap to a deal beyond the 2018 season. There's a need at linebacker, but historically, that hasn't been a position that the team has committed significant draft capital to. The team has had success developing talent on the cheap, with its linebacker unit, so it will probably continue to do that. In the secondary, the team has a trio of first-round cornerbacks selected in 2012, 2014, and 2016. Adam Jones also might return to the unit, but the team could still look to address the secondary at the safety position. Jay thinks that it's very possible that with their first 3 picks, the Bengals could add 2 offensive linemen and a defensive back. Jay and I closed by talking about Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis. From Jay's perspective, the team is still all in on Dalton. They think that he can take them deep in the playoffs with the right group of players around him. And for Lewis, he signed for 2 more seasons. Given that the Bengals are slow to change and they don't like to pay people for not working, Lewis is likely to be with the team for that time and maybe a lot longer if they make the playoffs and win a postseason game during that time. Here are my thoughts on the conversation with Jay. The team has multiple needs, as we mentioned earlier, along the offensive line. When the Bengals still had the 12th pick in the draft, in my mock draft at Fantasy Labs, I had them taking an offensive lineman. I still think now that they are at pick 21, they're going to take an offensive lineman. There are a number of guys they could take. One of the problems, though, is that Cordy Glenn is there. He is their quote-unquote locked-in left tackle. It's just a question as to whether he's going to be healthy, whether he's going to produce at the level to which he was producing before his injuries, which have kind of incapacitated him for the last 2 seasons. If you draft a guy in the first round, you typically want him to be a left tackle caliber type of player. With Isaiah Wynn, Orlando Brown, Colton Miller, Connor Williams, Mike McGlinchey, all of those guys have had experience in college, and they look like guys who maybe could have left tackle capability, but none of them is really locked in as a left tackle. Most of them are being projected to the NFL first as right tackles and then maybe left tackles. So it is an unfortunate situation that you do have a number of round 1 potential guys at tackle, but it's unlikely or it's unknown if any of those guys really has the potential to be the blind side, a long-term blind side protector. And that really is ideally what they would be getting with the guy they acquire in the first round. There's also the possibility if they don't look at tackle, they could look at a guy who's a center slash guard. That could be James Daniels from Iowa, Billy Price from Ohio State, Frank Ragnow from Arkansas. All of those guys have gotten kind of borderline round 1, round 2 hype. I think one of those guys would be there in the second round. So, you know, maybe they go with a tackle in round one and then a center in round two. I think that would make a lot of sense. Either way, it looks like they will be addressing the offensive line, which was really the Achilles heel for the team last year. So in some way, they do have to address the line. Maybe not the best class, though, to be doing that. So it's kind of an unfortunate situation. In terms of the Bengals and their skill position players, man, they have invested so much into their skill position unit since 2011, which was really when they started the process of reconstructing their team. AJ Green in round one, Andy Dalton in round two of 2011. And then 2013, Tyler Eifert in round one, Giovanni Bernard in round two. 2014, Jeremy Hill in round two. And then, I mean, it continues. You have Tyler Croft in round three of 2015. Tyler Boyd in the second round of 2016. And then last year, John Ross in round one, Joe Mixon in round two. No team has invested as many top 100 picks into the skill position players as the Bengals have over the last 7 years. And so you think that this unit should be fairly stacked, should be fairly cohesive, and it's not entirely the case, especially with the young guys. The guys they've taken over the last couple of years, they haven't produced as I think expected or desired. But Joe Mixon, I think, is going to be pretty special this year. Just to give some context on him, I mean, people know he was a second-round pick, potentially could have been a first-round pick if not for off-field issues. And, you know, I don't really want to get into that. You know, some people might not like him because of those things, and that's totally understandable. He also did, I mean, he underperformed just in terms even of efficiency. He wasn't nearly as efficient as people would want him to be at 3.5 yards per attempt. It might be possible to get him slightly on the cheap in dynasty leagues, although I do doubt that. Because still, on the whole, he's a big-bodied athletic lead back who now is pretty much locked in as the lead guy for his team. And last year, he exhibited very good receiving skills. 30 receptions on 34 targets, 913 total scrimmage yards. You can project a pretty big leap forward this year. And I think that we should project that leap. Because one thing is that he was also very young when he entered the league. He was 21 years old as a rookie. Over the last decade, there have been 10 guys total, or sorry, 9 total. Joe Mixon is one of them. 9 guys to enter the league as, you know, like big-bodied, first or second round, volume-based backs, like big workhorse type of backs who are 21 years old and are 21 years old, you know, for their rookie seasons, for the entirety of their rookie years. Let me list those guys. So Joe Mixon last year, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, LeSean McCoy, Beanie Wells, Darren McFadden, Rashard Mendenhall, and Jonathan Stewart. That's a pretty impressive list. Even if you cherry pick and say, well, Darry McFadden was really kind of a disappointment given his draft range. And, you know, Jonathan Stewart never fully developed into the guy that people expected him to be. You know, he's not a good receiver, blah, blah, blah. Beanie Wells, you know, massive disappointment. Never really developed into the person he was supposed to be for the Cardinals. Even if you have qualms with some of the guys in that group. As a whole, the group is very impressive. And every single player, literally every single player in that group had at least one season of 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Like the future is very bright for Joe Mixon. So there is a lot of reason to be bullish on him, both in terms of just like the franchise, they should be bullish on him, and then fantasy players as well. I thought it was interesting that Jay was talking about Josh Malone as someone that the team was hyping. or not hyping, but bullish on for the future. I normally doubt the ability of guys drafted in the fourth round or later who weren't big producers in college. But it's possible with Malone. And part of it is because he does have good athleticism. He does have good size. And the Bengals have actually done it before. They did it with Marvin Jones, who was a fifth rounder. They did it with Mohamed Sanu, who was a third rounder. So guys with a comparable draft range, both of them have had NFL success. Both of them are veterans still in the league. So it's possible Josh Malone really could end up becoming someone who is a, you know, maybe not a fantasy stud, maybe not someone who's relied on every week, but someone who does offer value and ends up becoming a contributing part of that team on a pretty reliable basis. That's possible. I think it might be possible, more possible for him than for Tyler Boyd. I know Boyd is ostensibly a starter, but I don't buy it. I don't buy it. His combination of size, athleticism, and college production don't match the profile of someone who becomes a reliable NFL contributor. And, his draft capital helps him out, but at this point he's entering his third season. Draft capital kind of doesn't matter at this point. What matters is that he's, a guy who isn't that big, isn't that fast, hasn't had great production to this point in his career, and is on a team with other guys who are much better at receiving the ball. AJ Green, right? Tyler Eifert, if he's healthy, Giovanni Bernard, Joe Mixon. How much do they really need out of Tyler Boyd? I don't know if I necessarily buy him as someone who, will be ascending. Much more interested in John Ross. And I think at some point, I'm assuming Ross will be able to stay healthy. I think Ross, if he still snaps from someone, it could be Tyler Boyd. I'm still on board with John Ross. He might be one of the few second year guys who is cheaper to acquire than he was as a rookie. Normally, the pattern you see in dynasty leagues is that you have to pay a certain price for rookies, and then they actually appreciate in value. And so if you want to acquire them going into year two, you normally have to pay a little bit more. So most guys experience a price escalation in redraft and dynasty leagues. Ross, because he had such an abysmal first season, and I should say sort of like a even like like unrepresentative first season, like he had almost no playing time at all, so it's hard even to make some sort of determination on what that means. I think it almost would have been worse for him if he had gotten a lot of playing time and he had done nothing with it, but because he had no playing time, I think the market on him might be depressed more than it should be, so he might be cheap to acquire. He's a guy I would still be interested in because he's small, but his blend of athleticism and size is still, it still puts him in a comp group to guys who have had NFL success, a first round pick, a top 10 pick. There's a lot of draft capital there that the team will want to get a return on investment on. And then he was productive enough in college and versatile enough with his production to suggest that he really does have a shot of having NFL success. So he's someone I'd look to acquire. In the second half of the conversation, I talked with Jay about Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis, where they are in their career arcs. Man, Dalton, I went to TCU. I will always have a very special place in my heart for Andy Dalton. I was married on New Year's Eve of 2010, and then the next day, Andy Dalton led TCU to a Rose Bowl victory over Wisconsin. Like, Andy Dalton is, he's great. He seems like a great guy, really good teammate, good community guy, but everything has to be right around him for him to succeed at this point. Or let me rephrase that. It seems as if that is probably the case. I don't think he's just scheme dependent. I think he is sort of like all dependent. He's coordinator dependent and scheme dependent and personnel dependent. Everything has to be right for him to have success. And my question is that the type of quarterback you want on your team? I think pretty clearly not. Everyone would rather have a quarterback who can elevate the play of the players around him, maybe help make up for having a poor offensive line, someone who can, throw his receivers open, someone who has good on the field attributes in addition to all of the other great things that Andy Dalton has. And you know, sometimes you can't get both. And so you just kind of have to choose what you prioritize. But I think Andy Dalton is good enough to be the starting quarterback for that team. But I don't know if he is the guy that ideally they would want to be the long-term option. I don't think that means they're going to address the quarterback position. But I don't know. You never know. But I think at some point they should. I think, you know, Dalton is 30 at this point. How many 30-year-old quarterbacks who weren't already great continue to get better after the age of 30? I mean, it doesn't happen all that often. Marvin Lewis, I don't know. I don't mind him staying around, actually. I think life has been a lot better with him than it was without him. And I think with coaches, it's important to have a pretty long-term perspective. Prior to his arrival in Cincinnati, the team was 55-137 in the 12 years before he got there. Four different head coaches, not one single winning season. That is horrible. Things haven't been good recently, right? The Bengals have two losing seasons recently, but you know, before that they had four straight winning seasons. You know, they've gone to the playoffs seven times. They haven't won a playoff game, which is very sad, but they've been to the playoffs seven times. Marvin Lewis is 125-112-3 as the head coach. He still has a winning record. I think you probably should continue to give him more shots. I think it's ultimately a net negative for teams to fire coaches who are slightly above average and then to replace them with guys that they hope are above average, guys who are, you know, basically retreads. So if they fire Marvin Lewis at some point, or if he resigns, you know, after his 2-year contract, you know, I think he will have to go on a pretty bad run in order to make that happen. And ultimately, it might end up making the team worse, especially if they can't bring in a certain type of forward-looking and I would say like analytically driven and young head coach to bring it all together. But that's going to do it for this Bengals Focus special edition of RotoViz Radio. Be sure to check out the episodes for all the other teams on RotoViz in the podcast feed. I'm Matt Friedman, Matt F. The Oracle. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening to this special edition of RotoViz Radio, the flagship RotoViz podcast. Special thanks to Hassan Rahim, the producer for this episode, and to Colm Kelly, the assistant executive producer for the podcast channel. Please review the show on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think, and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.